was with the part about learning. What we had been discussing is developing an idea that I think is such a beautiful idea, and that's the idea of firm, fair, and friendly. We spoke about firm, we spoke about fair, and we're up to friendly. I'm not sure if we had done the last part of fair, so if I apologize if I'm repeating myself, but it is actually something that's very important. And that is, in terms of fair, of course, we've spoken about rewards and punishments, etc., etc., and we spoke about its limited place in chinuch, but its important place. And part of fair is also being fair in the way we dole out rewards and punishments. And I mentioned about my daughter that I had thought that she had said something terrible, and she really hadn't said something so terrible. So the context before we react, we have to really, really know what's going on in the context of what our kids are reacting to or talking about before we make assumptions. And making assumptions is a very, very scary thing. We do it all the time. It's, by the way, avoda and midos for us, you know, not to assume certain things about people. A lot of times assumptions that we make are incorrect. If it's an extreme, then that means a person's suffering from paranoia. But even if it's not an extreme, sometimes we assume, and there's a lot of place to be down the kapsus that we could work on in general, kal v'chomer for our own children, to spend time being down the kapsus then. Another part of being fair is an eitza tova, and that is involving the child when it comes to reward and punishment. We want to give incentives for our children, and we have to punish them at certain times. Your child's not going to be normal if they don't need a punishment sometimes. But we could discuss with them what's an appropriate reward and have a conversation with them. Remember, firm. Once it's clear that this is going to be the reward, there's no negotiation. There's no negotiating. They could try to negotiate. You don't have to get upset at that. But inside, you're calm, you're collective. There's no negotiation. It's firm, and it's fair. And fair also means that we try to communicate in a way that it's bi-directional. Even for a 4 or 5 year old, obviously for a 2 year old it's a lot harder, but for a child that's already 5 or 6 year old, to talk about, to communicate, what would they like as a reward, what they think is fair, and then you also, your opinion is very important as well. And last piece is friendly, and this is still in booklet number 4. There is a beautiful legend, which is probably a legend, but absolutely beautiful legend, that Reb Chaim was once found by someone, whether it was his children or one of his Talmidim. The legend goes that he was tied to a tree. That Reb Chaim was tied to a tree. So they untied Reb Chaim and they asked him, Rebbe, what happened? And Reb Chaim said that what happened was as follows, that he said what happened was is that there were kids that were playing, and they said to but they were having a disagreement. So Reb Chaim came over. Reb Chaim was always bothered when children were disturbed. So he went over and he said, "How can we help you?" So he said, "They said, Harav, we're playing a game called cops and robbers. In those days, the cops would drive on a horse, but no one wants to be the horse." So Reb Chaim said, "So I volunteered to be the horse." And he said, then they finished playing, but they tied me up to the tree, and so I was left tied to the tree. That's the legend that they have about Reb Chaim. There's one thing that comes out from the legend that is actually very, very true, and that was that Reb Chaim's ordinariness was amazing. You know, Amir Tzashem, some of you are going to become successful and great, and some of you might even become famous. And be mashpia l'chulei, never lose your ordinariness. It's such a beautiful, beautiful thing. It's such a beautiful, beautiful thing. It's in many ways the essence of who we are. Who we are, not our positions or our titles or the clothes that we wear or the appellations that are before our name. Who we are is our simple selves. And Reb Chaim's godless was he never lost that. He never lost his ordinariness. despite the fact that he was a genius. Reb Chaim's descendant, Rav Miller, just quoted this from the Rav, that the Rav said that there's a big difference from being childlike and childish. I might have mentioned this previously. And the idea of being always having a childish sense, Reb Chaim never lost his childish sense. Why am I mentioning this when it comes to Chinuch HaBanim? I'm not talking about now what's appropriate for a Rav to do and what's not appropriate to do. I'm not talking about a Rav's interaction with his the children in his congregation. What I'm talking about is for a parent to be able to do that with their children. I've spoken with parents who've said that they have a difficult time playing with their children. And if that is someone who you are, if that's part of your personality, you're very serious, something to work on. I mentioned to you that it was much more ordinary to play with my son, who's now 20 years old, 20 years ago. 20 years ago, I was still going to the gym in YU and playing basketball and so on and so forth. Now, I don't do that anymore, and so I forced myself with my son when he was younger, my youngest son, to sit on the floor and play with him. Ara yom azeh, we still amakbid when I play chess, if the floor is not too cold, to play chess with him sitting on the floor. In other words, to try to be as ordinary as possible with your children, and Mir Hashem, you should be zochet to have children in your older age as well. When you have children in your older age, it actually becomes more of a challenge, as I mentioned. But to maintain your ordinariness is something that's very, very, very important. In other words, on a certain level, one of my mantras to my children is, "I'm not your friend; I'm your father." That's true, and that's a fine mantra to have, but that doesn't mean you shouldn't be friendly. It's a dialectic. To be able to be a father, yet friendly. Be able to share those moments that are just simply ordinary, and friendship, and so on and so forth. That's something that's important. Of course, the Musar Gadol, the Musar Haskel, and the amazing thing is that I see time and time and time in life, is everybody knows this, but it's so hard to live. I was just talking to a Talmud of mine who knows this, but it's still so hard because life has certain realities. So all I could do is just like scream this from the rooftops, and it's a challenge that everybody has, but that's what the Sifsi Sharm says, that the most basic things are the hardest things, and those are the things that need the most visit. And that is what I wrote under the letter F of friendly, is that I've never met someone who regrets spending too little time at the office and too much time with your family. Have you ever met somebody who regretted spending too much time with their family? It doesn't exist. Lo haya v'lo nivra. Such a thing never existed. The dreams that they had professionally, ultimately, even if they compromise them, first of all, it's all in our heads. We say to ourselves, if I would only stay more time in the office, if I would only do such and such, and by the way, for Talmidei Chacham, if I would only learn more, then I'll be a Talmid Chacham. It's true. Learn more instead of surfing the news sites. But when it comes to time with your children, so then no one has ever regretted spending too much time with their children and their wife as well. Someone thinks that he's reached the Madrega, that he's at the Madrega of Parush. I mean, most positive, I'm not saying this in a condescending way. There is such a thing. There is such a Bechina. And there are people who are Bali Madrega that they need to spend less time with their wife and children. So it'll be a schus for me to spend some time and talk to you. Be'emes, I mean it, I'm not saying this cynically. I mean be'emes, there are people out there, but it needs to be done with a lot of chachma. It's not something that's done. And certainly, most of the time when we don't spend enough time with our wives and children, by the way, the same goes in both directions. I like to give more musar to the husbands than to the wives. My wife's job to give mostly to the women, but it goes in both directions. Of course, no one ever regrets that in general. Again, there are exceptions to the rule, but the yisod is a very, very important yisod. Every businessman knows, and Rivoldi says it so beautifully, without talking in business terms, every businessman knows that at the end of the day, there is initial investment that you have to make, and you don't see the payros, you don't see the results from it right away. There are times you'll say, why? Does it really make a difference if I spend so much time with the kids? And the answer is yes. Yes. Every moment of it is something that's precious, and every moment of it is something you'll never know what moments will become embedded in your children's minds and will stay with them. Listening, in terms of friendly, we spoke about listening a lot in Shalom Bayis. The same yisod that applies for listening in Shalom Bayis is the yisod that when it comes to Chinuch HaBanim as well. The yisod is, if it's important to you, it's important to me. If it's never, never, never negate a child's emotion. And sometimes we do it lishma. An example of negating a child's emotion lishma would be the case in which we describe that a girl comes home and tells his mother, I have no friends in school. And what's the mother's initial reaction? She wants to say, no, it's not true, you have friends. And she begins to list off, you're friendly with Rivka, and you're friendly with Shana. But at the end of the day, there's emotion that she has. So listen and be with that emotion. And be with it. Do our best not to negate it. And a lot of times what we want to do is negate it because we have positive reasons why we want to negate it. But to listen and to be with that emotion. How to process that with the child. Not every conversation right away requires a solution. I would recommend in most instances when a child comes home and expresses that emotion, just run with that emotion. Just be with that emotion. And in your mind is racing. It's not true. It's not true. It's not true. Because I know that Shana's mother just called. Shana wanted a play date and so on and so forth. But let the kid be with that emotion. And when things are calm, you'll find a way that's wise to counter it, the reality of that reality is not correct. Sometimes the best thing is just to hear and to listen as opposed to project. Okay, that concludes booklet number 4. For those of you who don't have it, there might be some number 5 sitting on the table. I'm about to share with you what I think is the most important yisod of all chinuch. It's probably the hardest yisod. We touched on it a little bit. It's in Revoldi's Sukkah Shnia. And this is a yisod in Avodas Hashem. I think it's one of the, if we can master this, then it's one of the most important parts of being a good Eved Hashem, as well as being a good parent. Matara, everybody see it on the second page in the booklet. Kasher Adam Mitpate. When a person says, Yesh li yeladim, that I have children, Yesh bazeh, for those who are learning Yoredeh will appreciate, Yesh bazeh tam lufkan. There is a bad taste in that. There's something from those of us who are learning Yoredeh, no same tam lufkan, and the taste it gives off into the general food is a negative taste. What Revoldi is saying is it's no same tam lufkan. There's something off with that statement of Yesh li yiladim, that I have children. Why? And here's such a profound mussar. Hayiladim einam shayachim lecha. Your children aren't yours. Heim einam rechushcha. They're not your possessions. Es hayiladim ha'ela nosen lecha HaKadosh Baruch Hu kipikdon nos. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is giving you, your children, Baruch Hashem, as a pikadon. As something that you're in charge to watch and protect. Your job is, you're a shomer, you as a parent are a shomer on your children. This is Yisod Gadol in Avodas Hashem. It actually differentiates us from the Western world. It's one of the most fundamental differences. What is wrong with abortion? Leaving aside issues of murder. What the fundamental issue between Torah and Western society is the idea that my body belongs to me and I could do what I want with my body. And Torah says it's not true. Torah says that our bodies are a pikadon. It's a lease that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has given us for 120 years. Our neshama is a chelek elokam ima. And our children, kal v'chomer, are not ours. By the way, that's why a person can't injure themselves. That's why a person can't commit suicide. At the end of the day, we don't own anything. We're here to do the best that we can to create kvod shamayim in this world. That's what we're here for. And therefore, our children that are born to us are our pikadon to raise to be the best human beings, the best Ode Hashem that they can be. And we spoke about last time, a few times ago, the idea that actually parents can't have certain expectations of being able to control their children's lives. There are some things that are only in HaKadosh Baruch Hu's control, not in our own control, both L'tov and Chas V'Chalil L'Ra as well, which ultimately is Kol Ma'adav Rachman L'Tava, with everything HaKadosh Baruch Hu is for the good. And so therefore we can't injure ourselves. That's this week's parasha, that the Isur of Kavala is not only to injure somebody else, but is also to injure ourselves, because the Shulchan Aruch Harav describes Ein Adam Bailim Alatzma, a person is not even a Bailim on himself. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu has given us this beautiful, beautiful pikadon. It doesn't belong to us. Our responsibility is to help it plant and grow in the best way that our children can plant and grow. And that's it. Well, my nafkamina. Oh, there are quite a few nafkaminas. There are a few applications of this. 1, 2, and 3. Examples of violations. Living vicariously. Every once in a while, you have a guy who did Gros Kolel, and he was Masupak, whether to go into chinuch or into business, and he decides to go into business, and he wishes that there's a part of him that so much wanted to become a Rav. And so now, he hopes that his child is going to become a Rav. By the way, the same also applies sometimes every once in a while. That the father became a rav and he wishes that his child go into business. Grass is always greener on the other side. Although if someone truly appreciates a life of Torah, whatever a life of Torah means, it doesn't have to be greener on the other side. But a lot of children grow up with their parents trying to live vicariously through them. Our tafkid is not to have our children fulfill our dreams. Our tafkid is to build, listen to this formulation, is to build our children's dreams that they be most appropriate to them reaching their ultimate tafkid, their ultimate goal in HaKadosh Baruch Hu's world. It's not our tafkid, it's not your wife's tafkid. It's to create the environment that they could be the best that they could be. And that means that we can't live vicariously for them. Now, that's not only in terms of career choice and what they're going to do in life. We went through the phenomenon of Bar Mitzvah as well, where ultimately, Nebuch, the kids become a show. You know, Donald Trump has trophy wives. So, unfortunately, in the Jewish world today, there's trophy children. Ashrecha Yisrael, in most, even modern Orthodox communities, is not going to be guilty of trophy wives. That's so base. That's disgusting. But trophy children? My son got 1,400 SATs. My son just got into Tier 1 yeshiva, whatever Tier 1 means. By the way, in one of my last Moser Shmuz, one of my told me, what's that? And he said to me, Rebbe, what's a Tier 1 yeshiva? So I responded back, and I said, nothing but chitzonis. That's what I said back to him. So at the end of the day, unfortunately, trophy children do exist in our community. And by the way, trophy children are not only trophy children in terms of gashmius, but even ruchnius as well. Baruch Hashem, parents who made it in the world of gashmius, so then they can invest in their children learning in Kollel, etc., etc. Ashrech Yisrael, it's an amazing, amazing thing. But at the end of the day, are we bringing out what's best for them? Or are we pushing them in a direction that really is what we particularly want for our children? By the way, that's not easy. It's not easy. What if you're a big Talmud Chacham? You're a big Talmud Chacham, and Gashmius doesn't mean very much for you. And you know what the essence of life is all about. And at the end of the day, you know, your children aren't necessarily making the exact same choices that that you would want them to make. So one has to be very, 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 very careful how one deals with those types of those types of challenges. And the yisod is a very, very simple yisod, and that is that the love and the care, no matter what your children choose, what direction they go, has to be unequivocal. And ultimately, to realize that our success in life isn't their success in life. Our success in life is giving them the most that they can to be the best human beings that they could possibly be. So living vicariously, as crazy as it sounds, sometimes is not that easy. Which brings us to the next part, and that is this is a little bit of Chazar, bending the child. Every once in a while, a child has a certain tchunas ha-nefesh, and we sort of try to nudge them in a certain direction, because that tchunas ha-nefesh is something that we're uncomfortable with. And your child is not your object. Our tafkid is to be able to create a situation where they could be the best that they could be. And the last nafkamina is to really, really show respect to their feelings. Be able to show that their thoughts, their emotions are important to you. By the way, when they're teenagers, they're going to have some really crazy svaras, really crazy ideas in every single direction. And just stay with it. Just stay with it, and I guarantee that they're going to grow out of it. Just be with them. Just be with them with their svaras, and if they're interested in your opinion, matov manoim. And if they're not interested in your opinion, if you've done the planting right in the first 12 years, then all the craziness of adolescence is going to pass. It's going to pass. Now, by the way, some kids' adolescence are easier, some kids' adolescence are harder. At the end of the day, I haven't met a kid that doesn't go through a turbulent adolescence. And when I don't mean turbulent, I don't mean classically rebellious. I just mean that parts of teenagehood, we all went through adolescence, are not easy. And our parents just being there and not being overbearing, yet at the same time available. If they're interested in your opinion, absolutely, give it to them. At the Shabbos table, you give your hashkafa when sitting and talking, and when the family is together, of course, your opinion is extremely, extremely important. Don't be afraid if you don't see your thoughts and ideas coming out, because eventually, if you've done a good job for the first 12 years, then eventually you will see that your children will have so much of what you thought they lost in adolescence. You'll see that they have so much of it. So to respect their feelings is an amazing, amazing, a very, very important part. In our booklet, I have a book, photocopy from a book about attachment, entitled Parenting from the Inside Out by Siegel and Hartzell. I think one of the Gruss couples gave it to me, and I spoke to them about attachments. I just want to spell out the obvious as far as attachments. Yes, Chaim.
I just wondering how it feels with taking in complete agreement all the, you know, quote unquote nafkaminas, as we would call them, you know, those three,
mm-hmm.
or, you know, the Revolvi brings in another one, that if you think, oh, because then they'll take care of you.
If you think.
You'll think they'll take care of you. If you make them, you know, happy, if you have a good relationship, then they'll take care of you when you're older. Like, you know, so thinking all these things as improper attitudes. I mean, can one, does Rebbe feel like, I mean, that it's still like that the lashon of, you know, these are my, you know, I've so nice to you, how many kids you have, you know,
I have
five children. Like, is it possible to have that lashon with the sense of, I have five children that are my responsibility to create the best environment.
Right. You know, if someone asks you how many kids you have, and you begin to tell them a whole schmooze from Vivaldi. You know, right? You could say that I have four kids. I don't think that's a problem at all. But it is a paradigm shift. It's a paradigm shift. Most of the world doesn't act like Vivaldi describes. You know, what begins? We hold these truths as self-evident. Is that the Constitution? We hold these truths as self-evident. It is self-evident, but no one lives like that. You know why? Because it's hard. And you know why it's hard? We could say it in Chassidus. We could say it in Musar. I'll say it in Musar. Because we have negius, and we have very, very strong negius. And these truths that are self-evident, as the Mesillas Yesharim describes, those things that are so self-evident are hard when your negius is at place. So if you know, you'll talk to fathers that are, they've built a beautiful business, they want their kids to take over, they want one son, they're dreaming that their son take over the business, and the son just doesn't want to do it. And so if you put the father in every other situation, if you tell him that the rabbi wants his son to go to smicha, successful rav wants his son to go to smicha because he wants his son to take the shul, so that same balabas is going to say that the rabbi is ridiculous. And the rabbi is going to say that businessman is ridiculous. But when you're in that spot, it's very, very hard. It's very, very hard. When you're in that spot where everybody else's kids are leaning the whole parsha, and your son, the right thing for him is not to lay the whole parasha. That's really, really hard. But it's poshut that it's the best thing for the kid. And I keep on coming back to the bar mitzvah because for some reason it's the theme of this year. But it's so obvious until you're in that situation. Once you're in that situation, then the truths that are so self-evident are hard. And therefore, the amazing part in parenting is an amazing part about HaKadosh Baruch Hu's beautiful world, and that is that everything is connected to us working on our own midos. Everything is about working on our midos. It starts with that. How do I deal with when my wife sees it one way and I see it another way? How do I react? How do we go about? How do we communicate? These things, as we pointed out in Shalom Bayis, are going to repeat itself in terms of Chinuch HaBanim. With Chinuch HaBanim, it comes up in a much more subtle type of way. I told you that amazing line for Rabbi Bina, I think. Did I say it to you? That he has an amazing line where he says, you could fool almost everybody in the world. You can even fool your wife, but you can't fool your children. And the amazing thing is that we could fool our wives, fool ourselves, that we have good Shalom Bayis. At the end of the day, our shortcomings, our children are gonna pick up on that, and so therefore our children are going to notice those chisaron midos that are missing. And by the way, there's nothing wrong at a healthy time for you and your wife to sit down and say, okay, what are the things that we need to work on? We're going to be zelcha to be building a home together with children. What are the things that, tell me what are the things that I need to work on? And then you don't say, and I'd like to tell you the things that you need to work on. If your wife is not now at the time that she's interested in hearing from you, but it doesn't need to be a bi-directional street. It doesn't need to be that way. You become the best father that you could be, and that's in your control. Just like you're not in control about how your children are entirely going to develop, you're also not in control of how your wife is going to develop. And your wife is not in control of how you're. The only thing that we're in control of, that we could improve on, is ourselves. That's the only thing that's biyadenu. And of course, the amazing part is that once we begin to work on ourselves, our spouses are more likely. But it has to be done shelo lishma. It has to be done because I want to work on myself. Period. That's the only reason why. It'll be gravy if my spouse wants to work on themselves. That's gravy. That's a bonus. But I'm doing it because I want to be the best person that I could be, to be the best husband that I could be, to be the best father I could be, to be the best wife I could be, to be the best mother that I could be. Here there's Dvarim Pshutim, I think, in this book, but I think it is good reading. How we attach relationships between children and parents, Siegel and Hartzell. And that is, we need to think about some things that might actually make us feel uncomfortable, and that is creating healthy attachment with our children, even when they're babies. If you take a look, skip to page 188 from Parenting from the Inside Out, where they talk about secure attachment. By the way, you should read the negative stuff. I'd rather focus on the positive stuff. They talk about ambivalent attachment, negative attachment. Take a look, secure attachment on page 108. Describes the situation. A father is taking care of a four-month-old daughter. The baby is hungry and starts to cry. Her father hears her crying, puts down his newspaper, in our case it might be the Gemara, and goes to her playpen to see what might be causing her distress. He picks her up tenderly, looks into her eyes and says, "What's wrong, my little darling? Do you want Daddy to play with you?" "Oh, I know, I bet you're hungry. Is that what you're trying to tell me?" He takes her with him to the kitchen and prepares a bottle. The baby learns, skipping to the next paragraph, all the mushy stuff. The baby learns from this event and the many repeated similar contingent connections she experiences with her father that what she feels internally can be, look at these things, important, can be known, respected, and responded to by her father. She feels felt that someone important in her life knows her. She is able to impact her world with success. In other words, the baby, there's no way for a baby to get food except to cry, but now she believes in her cry. She believes that she now could cry and to get food. If I communicate, the world will be able to provide me with the way to get my needs met. And then avoidant attachment is a child who develops an avoidant attachment has a different set of expectations with her father. When she cries from a playpen, her father doesn't notice at first. When her crying becomes more insistent, he says to her, "What's all the fuss?" Skipping to the next page, the next paragraph. In this scenario, the baby has learned that her father doesn't always read her signals well. First, he has trouble even hearing her, and then he doesn't understand what she wants. He doesn't seem to pay attention to subtle cues. That's avoidant attachment. And then there's ambivalent attachment, which they then go on to describe. Here's the challenge that we have as parents of young children. Attachment is something that starts out pretty young, when kids are quite young. And being there for our children is something that's very, very important. The healthier attachment that we're able to create, the more positive the psychological makeup of our children. And therefore, you know, when we think about how our children are growing up in terms of the care that they're getting, that's something that we need to ask ourselves, what will help for healthy attachment with our children? Now, if I would stop right here, many people would take it as if I was saying, you know, that the father and mother always have to be around. I don't believe that. Partly because I wasn't raised that way myself. My mother worked part-time, and she wasn't always home. And I think that, from what I know from my childhood, I think there was a healthy attachment. But, and here's a very important point, when my mother was around, she was really around. And my father was around, he was really around. And my parents didn't have the same challenge that you have. And that is that we are inundated with so many distractions. Sunday when my father was home, was time with the children, period. I was thrilled to hear, as I mentioned in the Musar tonight, that people told me that they're putting away their phones more. In fact, the Talmud this morning, actually not from the Gris Kol, but listened to it, told me that I want to dramatize this a little bit for one time to put in a musar, but I just realized there's a new halacha we have to teach, and that is that when you wake up, you're not allowed to touch your phone before Netilas Yadayim, right? You have your phone next to the bed, and the first, especially about our family in America, etc., you write and you left a message, and you want to know when your sister finally make up the wedding and this and that, and then you had a package that was sent, and did your mother get it to them in time? Did you not get it to them in time? Etc. All of those things. And the Talmud of mine said to me, I was so proud, it's amazing. He said to me, "My wife and I decided we're letting our phones charge in the kitchen. Not charging in the room. Having our phones charge in the kitchen." Why do I mention that now? If I was, let's say, Jude Michelle, I mean, you could dramatize this into an amazing, such a, you know, this thing about the halacha matil sidayim before touching your phone. There's so much to embellish on our challenges that we have today. I mention it now because the obvious thing is that it's one thing when it comes to your spouse, who Baruch Hashem had healthy attachment with their parents, and that if your wife is going to be upset at you that you were spending too much time on your phone, or your husband's going to be upset at you. So you guys will work through, and hopefully you'll improve, and you'll learn to put your phones in the kitchen, and you'll move on. With your kids, it's going to be a little bit harder, because these critical ages, from the age of 0 to 10, are absolutely critical in terms of attachment. And Baruch Hashem, all of our children, we're so happy with. But we look back and we say, you know what? If we would have done that, and by the way, I think all parents will say that. If I had done this, maybe, you know, and so on. You know, kids will remember the times that they were disappointed in their parents. It's only natural. But it's going to happen. The scorecard is there. Your children are going to be keeping a scorecard. Not because they want to keep a scorecard on you, but it's about the way that they, about how they developed. And by the way, if there's a time that you notice that something your parents dropped the ball on, it's not because that you, chas v'chalila, are being vindictive. It's because that's life. Whatever goes through a child in those first 10 years is really seared with them. And that's something that, in many ways, is mu'uvas she'iyav sheliskon, that the Mishnah Rashan describes, something that's bent, that can't be turned back. Versus when you're older, even without mistakes that we make with our spouses, I'm not talking about, God forbid, questions of loyalty and things like that, but I'm talking about the most basic things in terms of the pigia of Bein Adam L'Chaveru that happens. For sure we want to work on it, but at the end of the day, it's not as searing as with our children. Now, you don't have to be perfect. If I would stop right now, it would only be, you know, you walk out to, my goodness, you know, everything I do for the next 10 years is going to be absolutely critical. By the way, you could relax. I don't know why Hashem made it this way. Once you reach my age, you could sort of relax a little bit. Then you just have to worry about paying the bills. But the other stuff is less important. So these 10 years, the first 10 years, and then handling adolescence, b'chachma, is another piece, but it's absolutely critical in terms of... But before you leave, I want to emphasize, no one's going to be perfect. And children forgive. Children do forgive. And by the way, if your parents were overall good and you can't forgive, then that's something for you to work on. That's, once again, something in your own midos. So you don't have to be perfect. The pressure is not to chas v'chalila be perfect. The only being that's perfect in the world is HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And we are going to make mistakes as parents. But at the end of the day, if this is a commitment of ours, all of the above is a commitment of ours, then our children will be absolutely thrilled that you are their parents. But this form of attachment is really, really important. And it means we need to think about how we're going to balance when the babysitter is coming, when the babysitter is not coming, when are we going out as a family, when are we not going out as a family, how are we going to spend time, and of course, the most important piece of what are we going to do with technology's intrusion on our lives to be able to create that time together that's necessary as a family. Okay, that's in regards to attachment. One of the biggest challenges of today's generation is anxiety. According to almost all studies, anxiety has multiplied in the last 50 years. Now, it's a little bit of a complicated thing because there are many more psychiatrists and there are many more psychologists, and mental health has become a big business, and it's very easy to diagnose people, whether they suffer from anxiety or whether they don't suffer from anxiety. But there's no question that in our generation, anxiety is something that's very, very potent and very, very powerful. Anxiety starts with a chisaron in attachment. When a child doesn't feel that strong sense of attachment, then the child becomes more anxious. What is anxiety? Let's just spend a couple minutes to understand what anxiety is. In its extreme form, someone who's anxious goes back to a place where man lives, man or woman lives in a fight or flight type of situation. Someone who's anxious feels that, oh my goodness, there's so much to worry about. When a person feels vulnerable, they go into a fight or flight type of mindset. So at anxiety's core is that a person living in a place where they're always sensing that their survival is at stake, whether it's their emotional survival or their general emotional health, etc., etc. The stronger attachment the person feels, the less anxious they become. So let's take an extreme case. God forbid a child who's constantly, never knows when their parents are coming or where their parents are going, but is always feeling vulnerable, is always living in a place where they're finding that their life is in jeopardy. Now, not necessarily they're in a place that they're going to die, God forbid, tomorrow, but everything is insecure. When a person is constantly feeling being in an insecure place, then that leads them to that most basic place of survival, and that is a place of fight or flight. Now that society has had a harder time in creating attachments, because once upon a time, if you were living in a little house in the prairie, when you had what you had is, you know, your father came home from work, and there was nothing to do except at night. So your mother was sewing your sweater, and your father was heating up the fireplace, and the kids were playing, were running around. There wasn't much to do. Nowadays, because of so much technology, your parents could leave at night. On the prairie and in the shtetl, there's nowhere to go at night. Everything's dark. And by the way, you don't even go to the Beis Medrash. When did your father go to the Beis Medrash? Your father went to the Beis Medrash for Mincha Ma'ariv, down Ma'ariv right around Shkinya, and then your father came home, and that was it. No one ventured out. All the Gedolei Achronim, where did they write Svarim? They wrote Svarim in their house. Nightlife, I mean even Torah nightlife, didn't exist. All that didn't exist. There's no idea of a father going out for a second night job. There's no idea of going out to a night kolo. All of those things, life was a lot simpler. So attachments were much healthier. A product of unhealthy attachment is a sense of insecurity. I don't know if my father or my mother is coming. I don't know who's going to be with me tonight, etc., etc. By the way, what I'm describing is a natural challenge of modern life. We can't turn the clock back entirely. But what we could do is allow ourselves to shut out some of those things that aren't necessary. And there's no question that there's a value of sometimes learning at home as opposed to going out to the Beis Medrash. And a mother who's scheduling something needs to ask herself, you know, what's the best time for me to schedule that in terms of the kids? The secondary product of that part of anxiety is a child not understanding and not knowing what's going on. That also creates insecurity. If I don't understand what's happening. So for example, I'll give you a very... I was speaking very much in theory about the past and the present. Now let's get very, very practical. You're going up to camp, and you have a three-year-old. A three-year-old's going to be going to camp, day camp. So some parents, that just sort of in their minds, they say, well, I know what camp it basically is like. I remember what camp was like when I was a child, and so I remember day camp was fun, so they sort of go up to camp, and they drop their kids off in day camp. That's one approach. And of course, the healthier approach is to have a conversation. And your child's going to have a lot of questions. And to answer all of those questions. And then to talk through the feelings. Now, by the way, you know why some parents don't want to have the conversation in the first place? Because they don't want to have to deal with their child saying, I don't want to go. So therefore, they're not going to have the conversation with them in the first place. But this is new. This is foreign. You know that camp is okay, but they don't. And something that's entirely different, something that's entirely unfamiliar. So that's why I wrote over here in Roman numeral 2, in 3 and 4 is verbal direction and to tell them and tell them and tell them. The more and more we discuss with our children on a 3-year-old's level, on a 4-year-old level, on a 5-year-old level, what they're going to experience, the more likely they will be to feel a sense of security in the situation that they're at. By the way, my wife and I failed on that sometimes. Sometimes camp started off well, and sometimes camp didn't start off well. Sometimes school started off well, and sometimes school didn't. But at least have it on your antenna. You're not going to be perfect. And anybody, if at the end of the day anybody here is perfect, let me know. And that was another 10 years from now. For sure there are going to be times that school started off well and camp started off well. But don't try to run away from having the conversations with your children to help them try to adjust as much as they can to those adjustments, whether it be to Gan, going to school as well, and to allow them to discuss their fears as much as possible. Now, there are stages where it's very difficult, like when you have a 2-year-old, and that becomes a little more difficult. If you and your husband have thought it out, and you said, this is a healthy process and normal, then don't be intimidated by your children's initial reactions. If you thought it out, if you've spoken to wise people, they're going to grow out of it. It's the times that we haven't thought it out. It's the times that we didn't want to think it out. I could think of a mistake that my wife and I made with one of our children that this day one of our children mentions. And the truth was, we didn't want to think it out ourselves. It was a lot easier for us at the time just to sort of let it be. Because sometimes letting the child talk it out and so on creates other challenges for us. Baruch Hashem, there are enough other successes that the child doesn't hold it against us. But at the end of the day, having that ability to be able to spend time to talk with them, to talk out those feelings, is something that's extremely important. Chaim said something very, very important last time, but when we had begun, and that is at the end of the day, we can't forget that the most important part is turning to HaKadosh Baruch Hu for siyata d'shamayim, because the myriad of challenges are so deep and so profound. At the end of the day, we need HaKadosh Baruch Hu siyata d'shamayim. So never forget that if you take a look at Roman numeral 2, our goal is an independent child who has internalized our modeling. We need to daven for siyata d'shamayim for that. Daven for a lot of siyata d'shamayim. And Be'ezer Hashem will be zocha to raise children who are attached in a healthy way, raise children that we recognize are pikadon, that they're not ours, raise children who have felt the warmth of the sun of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Torah, also the rain, surrounded by the appropriate variables that are necessary, and not children that feel that they've been built, but rather children who feel that they've been surrounded by something that's absolutely beautiful, and that is our Masorah. Meretz Hashem, next time, I added grandparents, and we have two more shiurim. If there are any other parts that you think that are important for us to discuss, please let me know. And a great Shabbos.
Thank you.